Greetings, and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that just has been informed that there are, in fact, other games in development besides Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'm David Lloyd, and I'll attempt to fight through the complete shock to host this episode where we look at what life will look like once we've finished the greatest video game of all time. Joining me here is Jordan Rudick, another person struggling with the bittersweet feeling of actually finishing this incredible game.
I'm tempted to just never finish it. Like I love the idea of, oh, it's always there. Like I can just enjoy it whenever I want and just kind of dip my toes in and not have to see the ending. I don't want to see the ending. Like I almost don't want to see the ending until the third game is out. You know what I mean? Like this idea that once it's finished, I have to wait X number of years before part three. That in my mind, that's agony. Like I don't want to ever be at that point. So if I never finish it, I'll never be at that point. That's kind of where I'm at right now.
I'm starting to get that way as I'm in the home stretch. I'm doing a lot of my last ofs. Like I did my last Moog or Mog. I don't know what Emporium. I guess it is the Mog Emporium mini games. I've done my last meetings with a couple characters that I'm sad about. Did my last Remna wave unlocks, and it's all starting to hit me. The sadness is creeping in.
So it sounds like you're checking off items from a bucket list. That's what it sounds like you're talking about, and that's my problem with this game is that like you can feel how special it is. And I really don't ever want it to end. I'm so happy just knowing that it's in my PlayStation 5, ready to play whenever I want to. Whereas when it's done, I'll be like, well, I've kind of seen it already. I've rolled the credits. I could go back and do extra stuff, but I just don't have a lifestyle for that really so much anymore. And so when it's done, it's done. And I really don't want it to end. And I haven't felt like this about a game in a long time.
Yeah.
And so, it's tough. Like I'm just kind of enjoying. I play once or twice a week. I was saying in the Slack chat, Casey asked where I was, and I'm only just kind of a bit of the way through Costa del Sol. Just every time when that game is on, I'm just like locked in, zeroed in. Like the world is kind of just shut away, and so I really look forward to playing it when everybody in the house is asleep. It's super quiet. And these moments where there's just, I know there's not going to be any interruption. I kind of turn my phone on silent and I just kind of become absorbed in this game. But it certainly is a very, very special experience so far.
Yeah. And the thing it's funny, I was thinking like Rebirth had such high expectations after Remake and has blown them all completely out of the water. Yeah. And I can't even imagine what the third, like the expectations, it's not humanly possible to meet the expectations that are going to be set for this third game now. It's just, I feel so sorry for the director and everyone at Square who's going to have to work on this and try somehow to follow up what this game has become. It's just Herculean task. I don't know how they're
going to imagine a trilogy of games where every entry in the trilogy was game of the year that year. you'll never ever see anything like that ever again, or even close. You know, one out of three is great, two is almost impossible. I guess you'd the first three Mario games, I guess you'd call it not a trilogy obviously, but one and three would probably be game of the years when they came out. But obviously, you know, think about the competition back then. There wasn't much.
Yeah.
But now there's so many excellent games we've played and talked about, half of them at least, and still, you know, the cream is rising to the top here.
And as a developer, I'm curious, like, what could you follow this up with too? Like, Square Enix, that, you know, okay, the trilogy's done. Great job, guys. Now we want you to work on Balan Wonderworld 2.
Exactly. No. The person responsible for that, I think, is in jail, is he not? Yeah. Or house arrest or something like that, Yuji Naka?
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, obviously. I don't know exactly how that resolved. Yeah, I mean, what does Final Fantasy 17 even look like now? Like, you clearly see how well this is doing, and whereas, like, 15 and 16 are good, not great, but there's universal praise acclaim. I'm not sure where the sales are at. That might be a PS5 thing rather than a quality of Rebirth thing. But yeah, gosh, I really hope that the future of the franchise continues to be, or can maybe go swing more in that direction of what the games are doing here.
We were joking that all the future games should just be remakes of the other Final Fantasies, but they put Cloud and Co. in the game. So the next game will be Final Fantasy VIII Remake featuring Cloud and Aerith.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Why not, right? That continues to be my favorite part of the game. And, you know, for us promising there are other games in development besides FF7 Rebirth, we tricked you. You know, we're actually just going to talk about Rebirth this whole episode. Not for real, but stick around. There will be other games, I promise. You know, maybe the idea is, you know, let's just remake other kind of character-driven Final Fantasy games like 9 and 6 and 8 and stuff like that. Like maybe that's the play after part 3 of this trilogy here.
Well, hasn't Final Fantasy 9 remaster or remake been a long-standing rumor and for years? Like there was that NVIDIA leak where everyone was convinced, you know?
It would be great to just kind of pick through that leak again. And I'm sure we've talked about it before, but like the games that it alluded to and which of those have come to fruition. My understanding is like at least early on, that leak was batting 1,000. I don't know if that's still the case anymore, but there were a bunch that did come end up coming out. And yeah, you're right, that was one of them.
Yeah, well, it'll be, I guess, I don't know, from the leak, it seemed like it was more along the line of like 1,000 Your Door remake, where it's like they're not redoing like a new story or anything. I think it's going to be kind of lock and step. Story-wise, from the sounds of it anyway.
No, but, they're not trying to make a trilogy out of it or something like that. Right? Yeah. I mean, this was obviously a massive kind of 10-year undertaking, and you know that going in, if that's what you're going to do with these games. If you want to, especially if you want to do them justice, right? But no, has there really ever been a remake that's been clamored for and demanded as much as FF7? Like, I feel like that's the one. Like, people ask for remasters and remakes all the time, but never to the extent the vocal outpouring of desire for a game like that.
I think the closest thing would probably be what's it called now? The Ocarina of Time.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's probably the next closest. But...
And the funny thing is with that already did kind of have a pseudo remake, right? Like it got one. It got like the Nintendo style kind of remake, I guess, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. It's hard to think about anything else. I probably should have been playing other games because I felt like I've torn through Rebirth. I'm pretty sure it's been like a few weeks since the game's come out, but it feels like it came out like last weekend. I've just been like consuming it so much. I got to be at somewhere between 65 and 70 hours now.
Yeah. Not that we want to spoil like our April Fool's joke that's coming up in about a week here, but we're renaming the podcast, Final Fantasy, Thirsty Final Fantasy Player, or Final Fantasy Mage, or some Black Mage. I don't know, something like that. Yeah. It's got to be something
Thirsty
Final
Mage Fantasy. Remake.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Part
Thirsty
one.
Thirsty Mage Rebirth.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, we should probably get into anything besides Final Fantasy.
I was thinking, before the 10-minute mark, we really need to switch to what we were actually going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, all right. So we are playing other games. I forced myself to play another game. So has Jordan. Jordan's got the new hotness that he's been testing out.
Yeah, I had to do this. So the story starts at GameStop, not having a physical copy for me again. But I pre-ordered a PS5 copy of Dragon's Dogma 2, and closer to release, I saw all the hype. The reviews were very, very praiseful of the game. Lots of people kind of showing off cool images and interesting events that are taking place in the game. And so we'd played the first game as a gateway to getting into the second one when we did that episode last year. So I kind of had my eyes on it and just wanted to see how it turned out. And obviously it's turned out quite well. So I've played a little bit of it after I ended up just getting an Xbox gift card from GameStop and said I canceled my PS5 pre-order, my PS5 version of the game, grabbed an Xbox card and just downloaded it on my Xbox. because again, GameStop had no physical Xbox copies for me to buy. So who knows what's going on there? At any rate, so I've downloaded, I've played maybe, you know, 90 minutes or so, not very much. I've gotten to kind of a first major area of the game, I suppose, where it's a little hub, kind of hub city that's been destroyed by a dragon, which is kind of cool. So you can see like the burned out buildings, the damage that's been wrought. Now I'm being taken, I guess I've met these soldiers and they want to take me to, I guess, one of the major castles of the game where there's another Arisen, right? Arisen is the figure that's kind of been possessed or taken over by the dragon and met kind of charged with slaying them, I suppose, and having visions and stuff like that. It's kind of what, I guess, what the protagonists of the game, they're kind of raison d'etre or their driving force is, you know, seeing these visions and I guess inevitably hunting down the dragon. We never got that far in playing the first game, only played like a hand, maybe 5 to 10 hours or something like that. But a couple of things have jumped out to me about the second game. One is one or two times it's shown the title of the game, Dragon's Dogma. There's been no number two beside it that I can remember. So it's almost really? Like a little bit of a reimagining of the game, I feel like.
That's
it's
funny,
not, yeah. Not meant to, maybe, I don't know what they're doing with the, I'm sure that'll, you know, maybe come to focus a little bit more as I play more. But the idea that this is very much a lot of the same and maybe just kind of redoing it, which I kind of like, actually. Like, I dug what the first game was doing. It was just a little bit esoteric, a little bit hard to get into, kind of rough around the edges. And so I'm hoping and maybe seeing a little bit of how it might be smoothed over a little bit here. What I've liked in the little bit that I've played so far is the pawn system seems to be emphasized even a little bit more, and I think it is really cool, these kind of heroes that you recruit to your side that, you know, if they die you can just revive them. And the game has kind of made it clear to an extent that the pawns are disposable is a very negative word, but they are kind of disposable in that once they become kind of underleveled or their abilities, I suppose, kind of fall off in terms of power, you're supposed to kind of replace them and get new ones. So instead of staying attached to party members that kind of grow over time, instead you're kind of hiring like these temporary recruits that, you know, they help you out. They're talking to you. They're leading you towards treasure, which is kind of neat. They feel a lot more real just in kind of the things that they're doing minute to minute, which I like. They're just their banter feels more realistic, feels more human, more personal, just the way that they kind of participate in dialogues with, you know, as you're running through a town or maybe talking to people that you've encountered or you're doing a quest with. They just feel like, you know, genuine companions. So their disposability, if that ends up coming to pass, we'll see. I'm not far enough along to have thrown anyone away yet, but that'll be interesting to see, like, kind of, okay, I've been playing with these guys for like 3 to 5 hours and then I have to go and recruit some new ones. What I do think is interesting about this as well is just kind of running through the world, pawns are kind of coming up to me or they're just walking down the road, walking down the path, and I'll walk close to them and a little dialogue will happen. It's like, oh, you know, do you want some help? Are you looking for another person to join your team? Like kind of that kind of jargon or they're using with me, that kind of banter. So it's kind of neat that like, I'll just be running past and I'll see a person in the distance and I run up to them and it's a person that can join my team, whether they're like an archer or a mage or whatever. And so I've been looking for like a healer type person. I've got two pawns so far. They're both kind of fighter types. I'm looking for like a healer to join my team. The funny thing is the two pawns that I have also made such a comment. They've kind of said like, oh, it'd be great to have a healer. And then so one of them says that. And then the other one's like, oh, it's okay. We'll choose items. And it's like, that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, oh, until we find one, I'll just choose items. So they almost have like their own little personalities too. And you can kind of choose that when you're, I guess when you're first customizing your original pawn character, and even when I think when you're customizing your own player character, you get choices about like what your traits would be or something like that. And I think that guides not only like their gameplay in general, but they're also their suggestions to you or their dialogue to you. So there's this nice feeling that the people that are joining your team feel a little bit more human, feel a little bit more unique or individual. And so I like that about the pawn system so far. In terms of the quest, I've only done a couple quests, like basically like simple, like go and find this person. He needs help fighting so-and-so. So one guy was getting attacked by harpies, and I chose an archer for my main character's vocation. And so I you know, fought off the harpies, brought him back to town. And then I did a similar quest where we found a campfire. So the fellow that recruited me to gave me the quest to go and help his brother out. He's collecting berries or medicinal plants or something like that in the forest. He's like, okay, we see the fire. We know the brother's getting close. We keep going. And then we encounter like a pack of wolves, and the brother's like kind of scampered up a little hill to be protected from the wolves. And these were tough. Like, I feel like this is an early game quest, but this was a really close fight. And what I'm starting to see, or maybe remember about the first game, is like, even early on, like you are not safe. It is not, you know, that you, it's like a tutorialization kind of thing happening where, oh, everything's going to be really easy early on to kind of ease you into the gameplay in the world. Like, there's an expectation here, like maybe that you've played the first game, or that you're familiar with games like this and you kind of know what you're doing. But yeah, I had to do like a lot of kind of shooting my bow a couple times and kind of dodging back or running back, kind of trying to circle around the wolves. If I had just kind of like stayed in one spot and just kind of knocked a bunch of arrows, like that probably would have been the end of me. I would have had to restart from some point. So I can tell that this is not going to be an easy game, but I do like the feeling of its kind of dynamic world of things just kind of happening, people saying things, and maybe your actions having consequences that you might not be able to foresee. I kind of get that sense with this game.
Yeah, it's an interesting looking game. Like I wasn't overly thrilled with the one that we played before, partly of that was like it was in an era when 3D games were kind of jank. I think it was PS3 era or Xbox 360.
Yeah.
And they were kind of doing that Shadow of the Colossus kind of idea of like the little character that like climbs up these big enemies. And so there, a lot of the gameplay was kind of pushed towards that, and which is fun, kind of fun. Like, it was nice climbing up a couple giant's backs and like stabbing it in the back of the neck and that sort of thing. So it was fun for you know, that and stuff. But it's kind of interesting because it's the big thing has always been like, it's been Capcom's answer of like, well, if what would a Japanese how would a Japanese developer make kind of a more Western style game? So it's kind of neat to kind of get that perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, it's funny, like I haven't played it, but I've seen so much of it on social media.
A lot of people are sharing stuff, yeah.
And much of it is like just wild, because like there's the big thing I've seen lately is like the plague.
Dragon's like plague. Yeah, I had to look it up because I was so scared of it. I'm like, oh, it's going to ruin your save. I'm like destroy a town. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. Like it takes guts to put that in a game. I have to give them credit.
For sure.
The other thing I saw today was there's an arrow. There's an instant kill arrow in the game.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it'll auto save the game as soon as it leaves the quiver, because they don't like it's a one time use. So that's interesting. Like it's doing things that are very neat and unique. So, you know, I see these things and think like, man, am I missing out? Should I be picking up this game at some point?
I mean, and maybe like I'm really excited to play more of the game and say like, oh, David, this has to be your next game, because I know you've been considering, you know, after Rebirth, is it going to be Persona? Is it going to be this? Is it going to be, you know, some of the other games that are coming out, you know, April, May, June that we know about, and ones that we don't know about as well. And yeah, I'm hoping that this game really captivates me in the way something like Witcher 3 or Skyrim did, and I can see how it might. It's got that feeling of, you know, just you go into a town, people kind of come up to you and they're like, hey, can you help me with this? And you can blow them off, or you can just continue on, do the main quest or whatever. And maybe so I'm anticipating some really interesting side quests. But it seems like, yeah, what I've noticed on social media as well, just things kind of happening along the way. Like you're walking down the road and, you know, a griffin comes out of nowhere and just like, you know, picks up one of your characters and like drags them off or something. Like I could see stuff like that happening, like just kind of dynamic quests, dynamic events that are unexpected and you know, maybe could happen anywhere at any time. That surprise factor is something that I'm eager to see if that kind of comes to fruition. And just based on what people have been sharing on social media, I'm trying to not watch a ton of the video clips that are being posted because I want to be surprised by that stuff. But I feel like that's what people are sharing, is like those kind of unexpected, surprising events that just take place out of nowhere. So I'm hoping to see more of that stuff, and we'll see. Again, really early days still, but I think it's got promise. It also looks very good. It's not like the best looking game I've ever seen, but it's got a nice kind of the fantasy setting. I think it's very down to earth, you know, not like, you know, super colorful or anything like that, but it feels realistic, like a realistic kind of fantasy, almost a simulation type feel to it. So yeah, I'm eager to play more. Probably play a little bit more after the episode tonight, after the recording tonight, I should say. And I hope to share more thoughts, whether you or Casey or Paige pick it up. I'll hope to share more thoughts on the podcast within the next month or so.
Yeah, I might have to plan my character creation before picking it up, though, because that's the other big thing I've seen is apparently it has a very robust character selection abilities at the beginning. I've seen a whole lot of models. I've seen Daenerys, I think her name is.
From Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I've seen some Geralts out there. Like, I'm just seeing like all these crazy... I swear, I think one was like Alf or something. Like, there was some really wild ones.
Really, we're dating ourselves with the reference like that. But did you say Alf or Elf?
No, Alf. Like
Elf, the Canadian, yeah. Okay, if you're not Canadian, you're not born in the 80s, you probably don't know what that is. And that might be for the best.
Yeah.
I had an Alf poster
definitely
on my...
definitely Google it.
I had one on my bedroom wall once upon a time. We eventually moved it down to the garage, but... yeah, that's a good pull. Yeah, I'll just add one more thing about the game. Like, I think that it being kind of Capcom feels, I feel like there's a lot of kind of money and time and heart put into this game. Like, I feel you can kind of just from the initial cutscenes and the opening of the game, like, I feel like there's a lot of people involved. It does that thing where, like, it's kind of like panning over the world as you're kind of flying through, or the camera's kind of zooming through and it's doing all the upfront credits and stuff like that. And I think the director of this game has gotten a lot of praise, and it may very well be warranted. And hoping to confirm that for myself soon.
Well, they got all that Resident Evil money. They can afford to toss some cash at some other titles.
And this is RE Engine as well. And I think it suits the fantasy setting too. It served them pretty well.
Yeah. I guess we could also talk about a game that I picked up the other day. I played the first few missions of this game. So this is another blast from the past as well. This is not a sequel. This is a remastered collection of Command and Conquer games. So I know on Steam, it was funny. Steam just has my number because I always get these emails and stuff from Steam. Look at this game. You might like it. And I'm like, oh, you buggers. I feel like you might have been like looking at my computer from like the 90s on or whatever. But
that's right.
Yeah, I grew up playing all the Command & Conquer games, and all the games went on sale, and I was about to start buying them until somebody I saw again on social media somewhere, someone was alluding to, hey, it's kind of weird that these games are all going on sale at the same time. Are they about to drop something? And then so I held off for a few days, and then I think like the third day after the sale began, they did. They dropped it's like this master collection. It's like pretty much every Command and Conquer game. That's, I think even the mobile ones might be on there. I can't remember. There's like 20 of them, and all for a very reasonable price. I think at the time when it first launched, it was like on 50% off. So I ended up picking it up for like $20, and yeah, it has all these great games, and the timing was incredible too, because when I got my Mr. FPGA, one of the things I had been doing the past few weeks is trying to emulate MS-DOS games. So I had recreated in software a 486 computer. So I ended up getting DOS working, and I was able to, I have all the old discs to this day, I still have them collected. So I was trying to load the original Command and Conquer on this thing, and it kept hanging during the setup.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you have to play the DOS version of that.
Yeah, yeah. So
I only played the Windows. I don't know that I ever played a DOS version of CNC. I think I played the I think I played the Windows version, which maybe came out a little bit after.
Yeah, but it. I tried my best, but I just couldn't get past that loading screen. And I know the community is having a hard time. There's like there's all fixes, but I just didn't have the time to look into it. And then all of a sudden, EA puts out this collection on Steam, and so yeah, I started up the first one, and lo and behold, it actually goes through the whole. Like you don't need it. The Steam sets up the game; it's all done, but it's still set up in a way that it's like. The game begins from that setup screen as if you were loading your old game. Like there's that cutscene where it's like loading the missile and then they have the meters that fill up and stuff at the beginning. And I just thought that was really neat that it was like this acknowledgement of the loading screen being neat at the time. Cause I just remember when the game came out, I'm like, man, I haven't, you know, this is so new and cool. And I'm glad they left it in there so that, you know, the next generation can see, you know, this is how the games used to load up or whatever and how they made it unique in this way.
Now, before we get into those games, David, and there's so many of them and a lot of them are really good. I want to talk about like your history with RTS games. Like where did it start? Was it Command & Conquer? Was that your first, you know, did you dabble in other series too, like StarCraft and stuff like that? Were you just a CNC guy? Like what's the whole backstory here?
No, it was Command and Conquer, like from the very first one, Nod versus GDI, I guess.
Yeah, GDI.
It had me hooked, and every time a new one came out, I was buying them day one. Like they just had this, like you said, the real time strategy. Like it just, I was eating it up. Like it was, they were kind of. Cutting edge at the time, because not only did you have like the really neat gameplay mechanic of like building a base and the strategy that was required to like to beat the forces, and then you could play as the good guys or the bad guys, like the disc, like there's a GDI disc and a Nod disc. I always thought that was right. Neat.
That was really cool. Yeah,
yeah. And then you had like these cinema scenes in between where they had like real actors, even like. I don't think he's in, I can't remember which one he ends up coming in, but Tim Curry is like the one of the bad guys at the beginning. I think it's the second game, I'm pretty sure. I think it's Red Alert. I don't think it's definitely not the first game, because the first one is the guy who plays Kane.
The bald guy, might have like a goatee maybe.
Yes, yeah.
I can picture him. I don't know who it was, but yeah.
Yeah. And then it was funny because when I started this playthrough, I started as GDI because I'm like, well, you know, back in the day, I started with the good guys and then I played as the bad guys. So that's how I'll start this one now. And the actor looks familiar and I can't think of who he is, but I definitely like, I've seen this guy before. Like he's been in stuff. Like I can't remember what, but. So yeah, it was interesting, and so they have the game itself is like up-resed. So, and it's funny because they have like a slider where you can move it, and you can watch like the different, like you can go back to the original resolution, and then there's like steps between like that and like the 1440, I guess, is what it can slide up to, and you can see how the sprites look. Like differently, like you can actually choose like the level of detail in the sprites. So it's really neat to play on like the full, like I have it full as detailed as it could be. And it looks fantastic on the PC. I'm just checking now too. The remastered collection is on 65% off now.
Oh, for sakes. I might have to pick it up. I, honestly, if I played like 2 hours, I'd still consider that worth it. And then just to have all those games. I know I bought some CNC collection years ago, but I don't know if it has all the games or, you know, if it's remastered. I think that might just been the original games or something on Steam. I know we've been picking them up because I played some of the later games with friends like years after they came out. We were just playing multiplayer and it was a ton of fun. But yeah,
$10 Canadian.
Yeah, okay. I'll probably buy it.
And I think it's like 10 games. Or no, it's like 10 or 60. It's like a ridiculous amount of games for like 10 bucks.
Yeah, yeah, it's so good. I love the original games. Like, I didn't love the new stuff as much. I thought it got kind of a little bit overcomplicated with all the generals and the secret powers and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I liked the original game. Like, the strategy, the cutscenes obviously were so good. But just the basic, like, Red Alert was really good too. Like, I really liked Red Alert. The Soviets versus is it the Allies or Axis and Allies, yeah. Basically, right?
Yeah,
those are really cool.
Yeah. So did you play? This was your PC game back in the day?
Yeah. So I would have started with the original game. I don't know if it was my first RTS because we had Dune as well. I think Dune was 92, and I don't know if Command & Conquer was just slightly after that. But we had the original Dune game, which was really cool because it had three factions you could play as. Right? It had the Harkonnen, which were kind of traditionally like the bad guys. If people have seen like the new Dune movies, like those are the guys that are like, they're all bald. They're like fighters. They kind of took over the planet. The Atreides, which were kind of like the good guys. And then there's a third faction called Ordos, who are like traders or like bankers, I guess. Like they could buy units really cheap, but their units weren't super great. So all the factions had like their own little advantage. Dune ended up getting like a remake or a remaster later, like called Dune 2000, came out a number of years later. That was a really good game too. Again, all kind of basic, like, you know, harvest the resources, bring it back, build up your base, build more units, and then take out the enemy units. Like same kind of gameplay as Command & Conquer. But yeah, I played Command & Conquer. I played the expansion to it, which I'm blanking on the name. It had like it might have been even standalone, but I just can't remember. Covert Ops or something it might have been called. Red Alert, the Red Alert expansions were really good. I'm trying to think, one of them had these things called all these like Tesla related things, like Tesla coils, which were like electric turrets you could get. You could even make Tesla tanks. I think only the Soviets or the Axis had access to, it's going to be confusing, had the ability to make those Tesla tanks, but they were really powerful. It could do a lot of damage. They were just kind of like a glass cannon-y though.
Yeah.
But yeah, just so many good memories of like playing Command & Conquer, kind of even one-on-one with buddies down the street. It was like my first time kind of doing dial-up multiplayer with my neighbors. And it never really worked all that great, but it was really fun. The couple times we did it, you know, like dial-up multiplayer is probably the worst thing, but it was fun. It was fun to try it out. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's funny. Like, so I've played, I think, three or four missions now, and all the memories come floating back, like the strategies of like, so I just got to I think I'm on like the second mission where I have engineers, and now I'm like, I'm reverting back to my old style of like kind of figuring out where the base is, blowing a hole on kind of the side, kind of away from things, and then sneaking engineers in the back to take over the buildings so that they like shoot their own buildings and stuff.
Is that your like go-to strategy? Like buy all their, capture all their buildings and sell them? Like sell them for money?
And oh, definitely.
Spend the money, right, to buy more units? Yeah.
Yeah, I had this, so I was just playing this one mission where you have to, there's like SAM sites everywhere, so you have to knock out the SAM sites so that you can bomb the base.
I know the mission you're talking about. I'm sure they redid it in other games. I know the one you're talking about, the original game.
Yeah, so I took out the SAM sites, and I'm like, okay, there's the base. And then I'm like, man, they're really building these, they had rocket launcher units and machine gun units, and I'm like, they're really pumping those guys out like nobody's business. Like, they're just coming and coming. I'm like, all right, what? So I just like took a couple grenade or like a handful of grenaders, and I just blew a side of the wall out, and they don't notice the engineers soon enough. Like I just like, okay, I gotta have an engineer run down, you know, down the line, and then sneak down to the hand of Nod to take it out so that they could stop building all these units. And so I'm like watching the little guy run, and I'm like, go man, go. And they finally notice him, but he gets to the thing before they do.
And sometimes they're not smart enough to build a new one, right? You might take that over and sell it. They won't know to build it because the piece of the computer can be kind of dumb in some of those games, right? So they wouldn't know to replace that building sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and in this case too, I sent three of them. So I'm like, okay, I'll send one guy to the hand of Nod. I'll send one guy to the construction site. And then I think the last one took one of the, like, Tiberium silos.
Yeah.
And
then you get the money too. If it had money in it, you get all those credits, right?
Yeah. So I sold the silo, and then I didn't even have a chance to do anything with the Hand and Nod or the construction site as soon as you take them over, they start attacking those buildings.
That's right.
I'm like,
that's
you right. idiots.
If you have some time and maybe their infantry a little further away, you could even pump out some units out of the Hand of Nod and just start destroying their base that way too. Like there's so many like different ways to play the game, which I love about it. You know, like all the missions are really well done, and I think they do still hold up. They're still fun to play. There's a little bit of that like rose-colored glasses nostalgia kind of thing, but they're still fun. I think the gameplay overall just holds up. Like RTS, like as a genre, it hasn't changed a ton in like 30 years. You know, it is basically the same kind of thing. Like extract resources, build buildings, build units. You know, fight. Right. It's kind of that a very very simple premise that I think just holds up.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is that it's like it's basically what took over mobile gaming. Like,
yeah,
Command & Conquer totally. Kind of disappeared, and it, all of a sudden, all these like clones of it are appearing on mobile. Like the Clash of Clans, I think, is just the RTS or whatever, and and there's a million just like it. And so I was always like, oh, this, like, I don't want to play this on my phone. Like, this is, even Command & Conquer was, I think, has been on phones for forever too. And I'm like, this isn't where I want to play it. So,
no, I like the kind of slower, more thought out, like, you know, 15 to 20 minute, 30 minute mission kind of structure that these games do. Like, I think it's more fun to have like this bigger map and kind of explore, get rid of all the fog of war and to kind of see where things are. That exploration element, I think, is fun too.
Yeah. Well, and I like how they have challenges where they like they'll rank how you did in the match of between like how many units ended up dying and how much money did you spend and how much units did you make and everything. And so when as soon as the first mission ended, I looked at my rank and I'm like, well, I could do better than that. So I had to replay the first mission again because I had forgotten that was even a thing. So it was like, again, it's just like getting back on a bike, you know, where you're totally. Just like, oh, I remember this. Like, you know, I'll do it this way. And then the strategies with like where you kind of send one unit out to kind of unlock the fog of war. And then as soon as someone starts shooting at them, then have them run back. I actually do that with like the little doom buggy thing where you just
send
the doom buggy to Recon. Go really quick. And then if they end up getting shot at, they can get away quick enough. And then they'll like follow the guy backwards. So you'll just like put them on the opposite side of the base so that they just walk right into an ambush.
I think some of the, early on, I think that works. But some of the later missions, the AI is programmed such that if you find them, they like send the house, right? They send everybody at you and then you're in big trouble. So if you scout out too early, and that you find them, that means they're going to find you pretty quick. And unless your defense is like, if you've built a nice base with some rocket towers and stuff or bunkers, you can be in real trouble in a hurry there. So it's nice that as the missions progress and you get a little bit of like the story and see the different territories being, I like the screen where it shows like the territories kind of, the world map sort of, where it shows like, oh, you know, where's the Nod's influence spreading, like more of those territories are in red, and then you capture them back, the GDI kind of spreads to the yellow territories. I always, like, as a kid, like, I didn't fully kind of grasp like the war aspect of it, but like I just thought the gameplay was fun and all those cutscenes were so cool.
Yeah, well, it kind of mimics like the World War II in a sense, because it's showing like it's in Europe, and then it shows like like you said, like the way the Axis or Allies are, it's kind of split up that way. So you kind of see them taking over the map, like the colors spreading as you're taking on the missions. And then you get to a point where there's a fork in the road where it's like, well, there's three countries that you could liberate or invade, depending on which side you're on, whatever. And then you can kind of choose where you go from there. And then they'll have like different style of mission. And
I mean, some of the missions, you don't even have a base, right? You just have like a collection of units and they all have to survive, basically make it to the end or survive and take out a particular structure. I think those are really fun too, because now it's not that war of attrition. It's not that same like go out, harvest and kind of rinse and repeat, get as much money as you can and just build up a huge army. You don't have that luxury. You have to be very careful about which units kind of group together, and you're doing a little bit more micromanaging. And I know there's people like who can do it really well, do it really fast, like pro, like StarCraft players are obviously insane at, in terms of like the number of clicks they can do and how they can micromanage and keep units together. But for more casual players or those who haven't played for a long time, like those missions can be really tricky, right? Trying to keep everyone, trying to keep everybody alive as long as you can and move damaged units to like the back of the crew so they're not taking fire anymore. Like, again, just part of the overall throughout the game, giving you a variety of different missions. It's not always the same thing of, you know, one base versus the other base, go destroy the other guy's stuff. Like they mix it up a lot.
Yeah. And I had completely forgotten that ground units die if they walk across Tiberium.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Because my units were like lighting on fire and I'm like, what is happening? Why is this? What is going on? And then it hit me. I'm like, oh, they're walking on the Tiberium.
Like, why are people screaming? Like, who's screaming? It's like, oh, it's my infants, my soldiers. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's one mission where they, but so it's funny because there is a mission where they actually tell you like, oh, you have to take the Humvees to get them, keep them alive. And I'm like, well, that would have been nice to know two missions ago when,
yes, exactly,
when I lost like three units because I sent them across the Tiberium.
Yeah. Oh, so good. So I want to know, like, what is your, let's say you're at one of the later missions or if you're playing against a human or something like that, and you know, it's kind of like big base versus big base. Like, what is your strategy? Are you trying to expand to different like pockets of the map and making smaller bases there to get more resources? Are you going like helicopters and a lot of like aircraft? Or are you going, you know, big, huge tanks? Are you doing a spread of everything? Like, what's your go-to strategy in a situation like that?
I always went with one base with as many turrets as possible. Like if, like you said, like they had those big Tesla coils where you could just like put them at, you build your wall and then you put them at the openings or whatever. So that when they came that you'd be protected for the most part. So I would concentrate on protecting the base. And then, I would try to go with things like I would try to set up either like the bombing missions with the planes in later missions too, you get like the laser.
The ion lasers. Cannon. Actually, the Nod had a good, those laser towers as well. They were super, they took a lot of power, but they were really strong. They shot those like single, the small red beam. Do you remember those towers? Oh man, they were strong. The obelisk.
Right? Of Nod. Yeah.
Yeah, they're so strong. Those could take out like the mammoth tanks, like any of the GDI's like huge tanks, even though that those obelisks could take them out.
Yeah, the only real thing, like, so the it would be more if they like sent too many ground units at you because they, like you said, they're like super powerful, but they'll hit for like once every few seconds.
There's like a cooldown, that's your chance to get in there.
Yeah, so you pretty much have to like you'd have those set up that would kind of shoot them as they got close, but then you had to have something smaller, like you'd set up like little Humvees or something to kind of wait at the openings so that if ground units were coming, then they would have to shoot them.
I always found it harder as GDI to play like a base defense strategy like that because their rocket towers just weren't as effective, I think, at defending the base. Like they were a little more scattershot and they could take out air units, which was good too. You didn't have to worry about needing SAM sites or something like that. The rocket towers could do air and land, but they were kind of jack of all trades. And so because of that, you needed something else to back them up because Nod could take them out pretty easily. Nod had the nukes too, did they not? Like, GDI had the ion cannon, but if you were Nod, you could last long enough to get a nuke out. I mean, in the first game, that was devastating.
Oh, yeah.
It took forever to build the structure, get all the science, kind of the tech tree is up and running to get to whatever the silo is that houses the nukes. And then you have to do the countdown, right? The countdown on the right side menu. You're waiting until the nuke is ready and then you launch it. You could win a game like that.
I was going to say that once the countdown hits, you're pretty good to go at that point because you just drop it on the construction site and then there's not much left to.
Yeah, that's taken out most of the base, I think. Yeah.
But when I was on the GDI side, I was definitely going with the helicopters because you could send in like 10 to 20 of them at once and be like, okay, I would just immediately send them all to like take it with the construction site because as soon as that was done, then you could just rebuild as many helicopters as it needed.
And it would be rare for someone to have enough SAM sites and air defense to stop you, right? Like you could just overwhelm them with the air power there. Yeah.
Yeah, because it didn't take too many hits to take out a building. So, as soon as that construction site was gone, you knew victory was imminent.
So. Well, because it took so long to build another one, right? If you wanted to either just build one from scratch with, like, an engineer. No, didn't you have to have, like, one of those mobile?
Yeah, you had to
have
a mobile construction vehicle
or something like that to make a new one.
But to get those, I think, like you said, I think it took a long time.
They weren't cheap. Yeah.
No, and it comes off screen or something eventually and stuff. So it was, you'd be toast before it ever got there. Yeah,
that's true. Oh, so many good memories. I have so much fondness for that series. Like the later games just didn't hold the same appeal to me, but I will always have a place in my heart for the original Command & Conquer and Red Alert. I remember going with my dad to the computer store to get Red Alert on launch day. Like, we went to a Future Shop, which doesn't exist anymore. It's kind of taken over by Best Buy, but there was a small Future Shop, and it didn't have a lot of stuff, but we went specifically to get Red Alert, and it was so cool, like, waiting for it to install on the computer, and, like, him and I kind of taking turns playing the game. Like, It was one of the few games where, like, my dad and I both played a lot, and we both, like, you know, we could chat about it, and we both got super excited for, like, the expansions coming out. Like, it was probably one of the games, video games in general, where we bonded the most. Like, I think Diablo was another one, like, the first game and the second game, like, we both played that, but I don't know that we ever bonded as much over any video game as we did the Command & Conquer series.
I remember it was like this and Civilization were like my big PC, like, in high school. That was like what I was doing.
maybe not even
high school. I guess it would have been like
before.
Late. Yeah, it'd be kind of later in elementary school. Mm. Like it was kind of my introduction into PC gaming. Really was these Command & Conquer and Civilization.
So what happened to me is when I got to high school, I probably wasn't playing Command & Conquer as much because we got into StarCraft at that time. So that's when StarCraft started becoming popular, and my friends and I, like, we would make a clan and we would have, like, matches within our clan and try to do, like, two-on-two or three-on-three kind of multiplayer matches. Like, StarCraft is a lot more, you know, I guess kind of faster paced, and it's got the three races, which are all very different, and got big into StarCraft for a while too. But I mean, there was always like that feeling of like, oh, you know, this reminds me of Command & Conquer. That's one of the reasons why I'm so kind of interested in it. But like I said at the beginning of the episode here, when we first started talking about Command & Conquer, is that if you've played one RTS, you've kind of played them all, right? They all play the same way. And yeah, I don't know. There's still always going to be that nostalgia for me for the Command & Conquer series. I'm always so happy to see it mentioned or see, you know, it get repackaged or whatever. And I think they've tried some, like, online only multiplayer games or like I said, mobile versions that I just don't think they haven't taken off in the same way. You know, I think the people who grew up with the series have kind of moved on to other things. They're, like you said, not willing to play a mobile version of this game. We just want the PC version again, right?
So. Well, and the mobile one now, they're set up where it's like pay to win sort of stuff anyway.
Totally, so
it's
it's annoying.
It's like, oh, you want a new one of those units? It's only 50 cents. It's only $1 here, $1 there.
You can drop a nuke now. It's going to cost you $2. Yeah. Or you can wait 30 minutes and drop a nuke then.
I'm pretty sure this remastered version has online PvP.
Oh, that's cool. I'd like to try that out. I need to talk a couple of friends into buying it. Like, the thing is with this collection is, like, it can run on absolute potatoes, right? Like, it doesn't need any kind of high-end PC to play the early games. My problem was when we tried to get back into it, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, or even just before having kids, like, we were going to, like, net cafes and playing, like, even in our late 20s, early 30s, we would still go to a net cafe, like, 3 or 4 of us, and just play online. It was really fun. The problem was I wanted to play like the older games. I wanted to play like CNC and Red Alert, and they wouldn't go anywhere back of Red Alert 2. Like, it had to be like Red Alert 2 and onward. And I'm like, like they're fun. They do some cool things, but again, it's just there's just too much happening. I like the simple version. Simple things.
Again, Steam, I'm on the Steam page and they got my number because they're like, "Oh, you enjoyed this game. Would you like to pick up the remastered version of Deus Ex?"
Yeah. Oh, yes. Is it also 70% off? Sure.
Well, it doesn't need to be. It's only $8 at full price.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Oh yeah. Steam. Yeah. They really got you with that Steam Deck, didn't they? Now they're hooking these games to your veins.
Too many games. There's probably hundreds of thousands on there. And
yeah.
Yeah, they're all like so cheap these days. Like the old games that I played or whatever. So it's so tempting to just click the add to cart button on like dozens of games.
Like if I had a Steam Deck and I was more into the Steam ecosystem, like it'd be very hard for me to ever buy new games on Steam because I'd be completely inundated with ads and marketing for nostalgia plays. Yeah. Like retro stuff that's super cheap. I'm like, yeah, I'll take 20 of these games for $5 as opposed to like a AAA game that's $50, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah. Good stuff though.
Yeah. Well, we managed to get through a full episode without. Well, I guess we started with Rebirth, but we got out of the way early.
yeah. But we managed to not go back to it after we stopped talking about it. So that was good. We're proud of the work we've done here.
Yeah. So yeah, we got some. I know. We'll end up going back to some Rebirth episodes sooner or later, I'm sure. But I know. Udian Chronicle 100 Heroes is going to be coming out in a few weeks. So
really soon, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be doing something on that. And I didn't realize Saga Emerald is only a few weeks. It's an April game too.
Oh man, like why do they both have to be April? Can't it just be like one per month? You know, one like interesting RPG that I would consider playing or reviewing or whatever. Like just do one per month.
Yeah.
Remind me, did you kickstart 100 Heroes or not? Or are you just going to pre-order or something maybe?
No, I don't think I did. I'm just going to pick it up when it comes out. So,
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to play or review that game. It looks really interesting. Even though we didn't love the spinoff, we kind of panned that one. I mean, this is the main course here. And it's the one that they kickstarted to, what, 4.5 million or something like that? Some crazy number? Like,
yeah, they were asking for 500,000. They got 4.5 million.
yeah, not too shabby, not too shabby. And like, there's obviously a lot of people with a fondness for the Suikoden games, and so it's a good one to kind of revisit. I think this premise of you know having all these heroes to collect. This was kind of me playing Chrono Cross, right? When that came out, like the first half of my playthrough was like, oh, I want to recruit all the different characters you can get. It's not 100, it might be like 25 or 30 or something like that. But I liked that kind of Pokemon-esque nature to it. And I'll try to do that, I think, with this one a little bit as well. Like recruit as many people as I can get and see who I want to have on my team. But
unfortunately, it's Murayama's last game now.
Yeah, that's kind of sad. I hope they add something in the credits to that effect, you know, like a message to him or something like that would be sweet. It'd be nice to see that. I mean, tough 2024 for RPG and anime fans, I guess, in terms of famous creators not making it.
Yeah, well, it's funny that like I actually wrote a little thing about Murayama for the site.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking of like, you know, we're at the age where we were there for the beginning of like the console era, like the NES and onward. And so you have all these like huge names from back then. Like,
that's right.
Yeah. And I mean, like Sakaguchi was up until lately still making games, and Hori is still to my, you know, making games and Miyamoto and stuff. But now we're starting to lose a lot of those other names like Murayama.
Or even retiring, right? Like Uematsu said he's not going to do a soundtrack. I imagine he might guest on some soundtracks or something, or maybe contribute a song here and there, but he's not going to be doing a full Final Fantasy soundtrack ever again. Like, or, you know, at least that's what he's saying. We'll see if he goes back on that to some extent. But yeah, I think we're getting to that age that, yeah, you're right. The developers we grew up with that made a lot of the games and series that we were so fond of today, they're getting older, right? And that's just time is passing, and it's going to be exciting to see who kind of takes the reins in the next couple uh, in the next years to come, or the next entries in our favorite series, or new series too. Like who's going to step up and be like the, oh wow, like this is that developer everybody wants to work with and stuff like that. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. We'll have to see. To a certain extent, like some of the names, I guess, because the devs are just like development teams are so big these days, like you don't quite see the names that stick out anymore.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
I was even thinking the other day, it's like they were talking about the director for Rebirth and Remake, and like, yeah, the name is not familiar to me. So,
yeah,
but like he's doing such a great job. I guess you still get like the Yoshi P's and, you know.
Yeah, there's a few folks who like they become kind of like the face of a series or a game or something like that. And they'll talk about the game a little bit more. They'll be doing like the press interviews and stuff like that. And so you do get to know them a little bit more, which is cool. Like obviously, Yoshi P, like everyone, who's played FF14 and the games that he's been working on have a lot of fondness for him too. He worked on FF16 as well, right?
Yeah.
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 So it'll be interesting to see what his next project is. Just cause you brought it up. I'm looking a little bit more at, Sega Emerald Beyond. It reminds me so much of Scarlet Grace. Like they're kind of using that same style here, right?
Yeah.
And then,
well, yeah, I assumed with the Emerald and the Scarlet, there was a connection. Yes,
good
there.
Point. Good point. Yeah. They're not just naming them after Pokemon games.
No. We assume anyway.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited for this one too, because it seems like another new game. Like it's not a remake or a remastered Sega game. Like a new one is intriguing to me too. Yeah.
Well, it makes you wonder if Kawazu had any, how much, if any at all, like he's got to be up there too.
I would guess he's, and I don't know this for sure, but I would guess he's a kind of in a Miyamoto type role, like ambassador, or like he's there and they might like get him to do consults or something like that. But I don't think he's
doing anything major. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? No, I can't imagine he's putting in 10-hour, 12-hour days or nothing. Like he's probably.
I would hope not. Like let the guy enjoy enjoy his pseudo retirement here. You know, but it is really cool that like you know he's been around for so long and they're still making games in like the series that he basically grandfathered in or fathered in, right? Like he's responsible for this type of RPG that Square Enix is still making. So there's a lot of, I imagine there's a lot of respect and kind of admiration for him there.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that there was a time there, I think it was like last year around when there was like a rumor about Fantasian being released on Steam.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, there's a Steam page. It's coming. And I'm sitting on Twitter looking at Sakaguchi's, timeline and he's like drinking margaritas in Hawaii or something. I'm like, that man is not working. That game's not
coming. Oh no, he's just enjoying that Apple money still. Yeah.
Like you could just see like, and it's funny because he's like still hanging out with some of the, I see him pictures with him in Shibuya all the time. Like they're just enjoying life at this point. I think I don't expect any more games from Sakaguchi. I don't think.
I mean, I'm happy to see like these folks who were so, you know, instrumental in getting us into video games and just making some of our most beloved experiences, like just enjoying their life, you know, enjoying the fruits of their labor, I guess. Right. It is a nice kind of heartwarming type thing, and kind of knowing that they've passed on the reins and passed on their knowledge and experience to younger developers, like that's cool too. So yeah, interesting to see April, two interesting games coming out for sure that we're going to be talking about, you know, probably both. It's not just going to be a month full of Rebirth episodes, we promise. You know, there'll probably be a couple thrown in there, but yeah, we do have other games that we're excited to get to soon. I guess this will take us to the end here. So, you know, a little bit of a sort of a departure talking about Command & Conquer, but I'm glad we got a chance to, because it's a series I love so much, and I'm eager to, you know, maybe dive into that collection you mentioned on Steam, and it's so cheap and accessible, I might as well just do it.
Yeah.
And the problem was I did that with Heroes of Might and Magic. Like I went back to Heroes of Might and Magic, and I want to do an episode on that at some point too. I bought the second one, or I already had the second or third one on GOG, and so I kind of downloaded that a few months ago and I was playing the heck out of it. But yeah, just, you know, we have so much fondness here for old games of the Thirsty Mage. You know, we're old souls in a way when it comes to you know, 90s RPGs and even real time strategy games. So it's fun to kind of reminisce and go back and remember some of those games. But yeah, Dragon's Dogma 2, like I said, plan to share more on that soon. It's definitely intriguing to me early on what it's doing. I meant to say, David, when you brought up the climbing on the backs, I haven't done any of that yet. So I'm actually happy.
Oh, really?
Happy that that's not the Shadow of the Colossus experience, or the trying to kind of channel that in the first game. Obviously, that was something they were going for, but I haven't noticed it yet here. I think it may be an option, but as an archer class, I don't think that's going to be something that push me towards. Maybe my pawns can do the jumping on the ogre's back in my stead.
You have to stab them with arrows.
That's right. Yeah. I do have a kicking move of some kinds. Maybe I'll just kick them in the shin or something like that. Make it easier for my pawns to jump.
You're
going
to have to post that if you're on the back of a giant ogre and you're just kicking it with your shin.
Yeah. Or if I just take arrows out of my quiver with two hands and just stab him in the shoulder, start climbing up his back or something like that. Yeah. That'd be fun. Yeah. But yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. We've got lots of good stuff coming in April. It's been a really good start to the year for us RPG wise. Again, we like I've been saying, it's going to continue. We're going to try to do, we're kind of planning this for this, planning something different for this episode, but we're going to push it down the road, kick it down the road a little bit, but just a kind of a preview and some predictions for, things coming out in the summer, some of the upcoming RPGs. We mentioned two of them here at the end, Aiden Chronicle, 100 Heroes, and Saga Emerald Beyond, but there's so many more coming as well. Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door, and others. So we'll do a little bit of a preview prediction, maybe some Metacritic predictions and stuff in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned for that as well. But yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. Hope you have a great week ahead, and we'll talk to you next time on The Thirsty Mage. Bye for now.
Bye.